Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Blizzard Watch podcast. I'm a talking Dionysus. No, I'm sorry, I'm not. I'm Matt Rossi. I'm the host. We were just doing a pre-show, and I talked a lot about Dionysus, so he's on my mind, as he always really is. I can just imagine him, feathers in the sun, running around, stabbing things with his feet. Just like a little...
You know those birds exist in Elden Ring, too. They have swords in their feet now, though, instead of talons. It's bad.
Yeah, I don't know anything about Elden Ring other than I'm not interested.
You just said sword feet birds. Sword feet birds. Eh. That's all I need to know.
But anyway, yes, we're doing a podcast. We're talking about things. Both Liz and Joe are here this week, so that's fantastic. Liz, say hi.
Howdy.
And Joe, say hi.
Hello.
And now we're just going to jump straight into stuff because there's stuff to talk about. And more importantly, I'm trying to move. Like my wife and I, and we're got a new house. Up in Kingston, if you know anything about Edmonton, it's to the north of Edmonton, but it's not actually in the ice field. Don't worry. The Yeti will not get me. But regardless,
are you sure you aren't the Yeti?
I'm not sure of that. No, but regardless of all this, you know, because there's a lot of stuff, like right now, our kitchen is not easily usable because we have all this stuff piled up and we're trying to navigate through it. And it's rapidly turning into the labyrinth. Like seriously, it is not easy to make progress through my house at the moment. So things are a little, you know, up in the air and everything's frazzled and I'm a little frazzled. So we're just going to immediately talk about the first thing I want to talk about actually was last week. We didn't really get as much of a chance as we could have to talk about this because we didn't mention it at all. Burning Crusade Classic had its phase 5 start. It started last Tuesday. I think the day we were recording last week's podcast, because that's what we do. We do them on Tuesdays. I don't think we talked about it because Sunwell Plateau wasn't out for another 2 days.
And so I was like, yeah, Sunwell Plateau is coming.
Yeah, we said Sunwell Plateau is coming, but that's basically all we said. Apparently, Kael'thas in Sunwell Plateau was defeated in like 51
minutes.
Not Kael'thas. What's his name? Evil guy. Oh, bloody heck. Kael'thas is Sargeras. In the Magisters. Yeah, not Sargeras. Kil'jaeden. I knew it was a K guy.
There are too many people with K names.
Yeah, I was trying to say Kel'Thuzad there, and I'm like, no, not Kel'Thuzad. Yeah, that's the wrong guy. But yeah, so literally from starting the first pull to killing Kil'jaeden, it took them 51 minutes. Which I remember when this raid came out back in 2000. I want to say 2007, but it might have been 2008 early. I'm not sure. Whenever it was, it did not take 51 minutes for that raid to get cleared. Back then, it took significantly longer than 51 minutes. I want to say a couple months at the earliest, but I don't remember exactly. But I just remember like doing that entire raid in 51 minutes at the end of the expansion after your guild had it on farm was an achievement.
Mm-hmm.
This is another one of those examples of like I didn't know it was physically possible to get to the end of that raid in 51 minutes.
I mean, I would think doing it when it was current and you were really good and geared up, I would still think it would be a couple hours.
Yeah, just for the distances you have to travel.
Yeah.
Like, if you took every mob out of that place, it'd still take you a solid 10, 15 minutes to run from one end of it to the other. It's big. It's a big raid. I'm like, wow, 51 minutes to clear that whole thing. Man. I honestly don't even feel like it's worth worrying about at this point, because I don't see what they could possibly do at this point. They've buffed the encounters. They've added new mechanics to the encounters. They've added delays to the encounters. It doesn't matter what they do. These things are just getting blown up. Yeah. I don't think WoW Classic stuff, I don't think there's really point in worrying about, oh, well, they're going to clear it too fast. Yeah, they are going to clear it too fast. Buckle up.
I think what they do is basically Season of Mastery. Like, the problem with WoW Classic, if you want to say there is a problem, because a lot of people really enjoy WoW Classic, and the fact that people clear it quickly does not necessarily diminish anyone's enjoyment. Everyone can still tackle this content at their own pace. It's there for them to do. But I think if you want to have a challenging thing that feels maybe more like the original, that's what Season of Mastery is for. Season of Mastery is to mix it up and maybe make things harder or more interesting in different ways.
Well, then that kind of does lead to the other thing that I was going to mention then, because last week, somebody really clever had me write a post about Seasons of Mastery and how we could, you know, gussy them up. And that person was you. So let's talk about season themes and Season of Mastery and all that stuff. How could WoW Classic change the Season of Mastery to extend its life? Like, is it just as simple as, you know, we're going to have a Burning Crusade one next, and then after that, we're going to have a Wrath one where they just restart again? Or can you add other stuff? Can you put themes in? Can you do special mechanics for them? What do you guys think we could do to make the Season of Mastery last longer or be more innovative?
I really think you look at Diablo 3. I mean, Diablo 3 is 10 years old. That's a whole different story. And
yeah, we'll be talking about that.
Yeah, it's still pretty fresh. It's still pretty fresh because you go in each season, you know, seasons last about 3 months, and there's something new and interesting to do. There are new challenges, there are new mechanics, there's new gear. So you find yourself, if you enjoy the Diablo gameplay, not everyone does, some of us do, you find yourself going back because there's something new. And the struggle with WoW Classic is that there's not anything new. And it's fun to revisit the past, but it's also fun to do new things. Sometimes you want to do new things. And I think that's where Season of Mastery can come in.
Well, one of the things I was thinking about, do you guys remember just before Burning Crusade Classic came out, when they were first starting to make changes to WoW Classic, one of the things they changed was like the orb that absorbed your Dragon Slayer buff. Like you could put your buffs on this thing and then let them expire off of you. And they'd just be on this thing until you clicked on it, and it would put them back on you.
Yeah.
Imagine a season where that was the whole season. Like you basically get, like, every time you kill a dragon, you get Rallying Cry of the Dragon Slayer. And so you could change your entire raid thing around killing a dragon first. Like, okay, we want to push new content, so we're going to go kill Anixia. And then everybody will have Rallying Cry of the Dragon Slayer because we'll turn our head in and we'll go do more stuff. Like, or you could have, like, didn't they put in that iron thing? Like, where you could do stuff on, like, ultra hard mode? I'm trying to remember what it was called.
The iron thing was, like, just playing all the way through without dying, right?
Yeah, but there was, like, a buff that they put on your character. A debuff they put on your character if you died. And so that debuff kept you from getting it. You could make that, like, the entire theme of the season. The season theme could be about a special buff that you got, like, if you didn't die at all. Or whatever. There's lots of different things they could do. They could change the way the game plays without adding in new stuff to the fights necessarily. Like I mentioned before, like, you know, the Trial of the Tempest theme where you had just random elemental damage, things like that. Joe, you got anything?
Honestly, if I was going to choose something, I would be adding things to fights or changing the way that encounters were at least slightly. We often talk, or at least we used to often talk about how WoW Classic isn't vanilla WoW. They are two completely different things. Yes, they have the same feel of it to a certain extent, but like the speed at which people are clearing raids and things like that really drives that home, right? It really drives home that, like, because of the way that the knowledge for these things have been institutionalized, the access to the different ways of how to beat things with technology kind of skewing it, things are always going to go faster than they were back then. It's just the nature of things. There's no way around it. But if you were to look at things like challenge modes or Mythic plus dungeons with modifiers, having a season where maybe there was a modifier or something that happened to change the feel of it, I think could be just fine. And I think it might be something players enjoy, because I think because of the age of these, you need to have something that keeps them fresh and keeps them recycling. It goes back to kind of what Liz was talking about with like the Diablo seasons. The Diablo seasons always add something new, something, or at least try to, something to spice it up at regular intervals. And let's be honest, like Diablo, Diablo 2, Diablo 3, they're games that you play that don't necessarily change unless it's that particular season with those particular boundaries or whatever mechanic they put into it. Having raids and dungeons that do that in Classic, I think is pretty cool. They're talking about doing that with regular dungeons on live already, and or regular raids on live already. And I was super excited for that, but I think it could also be leveraged as a really good way to sort of not get more longevity out of the old Classic content, but give players more challenges to overcome. I don't know if that makes sense. I'm sorry if that's a little incoherent, but I just kind of think it would be neat.
All right. Well, before we move on, I actually had one other idea why you guys were talking. And I was like, players back in back when we were all playing World of Warcraft for the first time, and this content was the new content, but it was also getting towards before Burning Crusade came out. It was new content, but it had been out for a year, you know, like Azura Ghost or mm-hmm. Kazak. And so people began doing odd things. That cough there. One of the things that always came to mind was people would kite Kazak all the way to Stormwind, because once Kazak started killing Stormwind guards, he basically went into ultra mode. He became almost unstoppable. And then I remembered, do you remember when the Burning Crusade started and they opened up the dark portal and had, you know, the guy, one of my favorite guys, High Lord Cruel, showed up because mm-hmm. Kazak had left. And I to this day still laugh whenever I make the joke about how High Lord Cruel, what's next, Grand Warlord Mean. But regardless, imagine if you started just making Kazak go to Stormwind, or making Azura Ghost walk into Orgrimmar, or having the Dragons of Nightmare just randomly show up in Ironforge, or, you know, outside Ironforge, or like at Tel'Drassil or what have you. Because we know that this is doable. You know, if you've ever done a PTR, when the PTR closes down, especially for like the beta, sometimes the GMs will just show up and start spawning these bosses. And not just the bosses I just mentioned. I remember at the end of one of them, like watching like the Lich King fight Ragnaros outside of Stormwind. Like they can do that. They can. So imagine if that was something that was actually built into the game. It was like, you know, destroy all monsters, kaiju attack with WoW bosses randomly attacking cities throughout, like not like constantly. You don't want it to turn into like, you know, the plague thing from Zul'Gurub. You don't want to like have corrupted blood plague levels of disruption, but it would be cool if every so often, you know, Alakir is here, or not Alakir, sorry, Thunderon. Prince Thunderon just spawns. And maybe it's not even like in a major city. Maybe it's like in Feralas. He just shows up. He's just there. Like, okay, whatever. I just think that there's lots of cool, weird little things they can do. They could do like all sorts of stuff to make it more interesting. But we've talked about that a bit, and Liz mentioned it, so we should move on to the next thing, namely that I believe as of last week, the 12th, was it the 12th that they said? I'm not trying to remember the exact day, and I can't. But Diablo 3 turned 10 this year. Came out in 2012. It's now 2022. It would be in fourth grade if it were a person. That's something to think about.
Not to think about ever.
Try to not think about it as hard as you can, sort of thing? Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. But I was going to, like, there's lots of things we could talk about. Like, there's the fact that the Echoing Nightmares mode is going to be permanent now. They've added that permanently to all Diablo 3. If you just like doing rifts and you're like, you know, what's going on? Are you guys going to raise the the difficulty cap here so that we can get, you know, more stuff, like a higher level greater rifts? The answer is no, we're not going to get greater rifts past 150. Instead, you're going to farm greater rifts for the petrified screams you need to run this content. And when you do, then you'll get new stuff and more difficulty that way, because this thing literally never stops being harder. It just continually escalates until you can't fight anymore. Like, it will find your level and eventually surpass it, even if you're incredibly powerful. That's how they're designed. So what do you guys think about that? And what do you guys think about just, you know, I'd like to hear each of your memories of Diablo 3, if you don't mind sharing them, just like something that the 10th anniversary reminds you of. Now let's go with Joe first, because Liz talked last time.
I mean, I don't really have a whole lot to add to it. I didn't get as hard into Diablo 3 as I had, like, Diablo 2. So, like, once I kind of got done with it, I didn't really go back. So, yeah, I don't really have much to add on that one. I'm sorry.
Okay, Liz?
Diablo is such a kill, kill, smash, smash, kill, smash, kill. You know, I don't have any specific, like, there's no specific moment that stands out to me, because it does kind of all blur together to an extent. It's just such a fun, kind of visceral game that you lose yourself to it, because it's, on one hand, you look at it from the outside, and this should be really, really, really repetitive, and it is, but it never entirely stops being fun, which is, like, that doesn't make sense to me. This should get boring after a while, but it never quite does. It's always just fun. I'm going to go in here, and I'm going to smash the heck out of everything, and I'm going to destroy a bunch of demons in, like, one hit. I'm going to destroy all these demons, and it's just, it's fun, and I think that's kind of a monumental achievement that they've made something that is genuinely really a repetitive kind of game, but it's just...
It's a positive feedback loop.
But it stays fun. Yeah, yeah, it is. It's really good at that.
Well, there's something we're going to talk about later, but I'll just mention now that I think that in a lot of ways, the Diablo gameplay experience is very much like playing Tetris.
Mm-hmm.
You are doing the same thing over and over again. There's nothing different. Like, if you've sat down and played Tetris for an hour, or if you sat down and played Tetris for 20 hours, you have played the exact same thing probably several hundred times. And yet, you can do that with Tetris. You can wake up and be like, oh, 4 hours have passed, and I have been making shapes go into other shapes for that entire period of time.
They're called Tetronomoser, not shapes.
Okay. Thank you for proving my point. But yeah, no, seriously, like, I think that's something like that Diablo has. But for me, the thing I was going to mention was, I remember when Diablo 3 clicked for me, where I went from, I can play this sometime, to, oh no. And that was when they put in the changes before Diablo 3 Reaper of Souls came out. Because I tried playing Diablo 3 when the Real Money Auction House was a going thing. And I wasn't spending real money like that, because that would have, you know, I wouldn't have been able to eat. 12 years ago, we were definitely not in a place where I could go around spending a lot of real money on video games. Spoiler alert, I'm still in that place. But when they put in all the changes, they changed the drop rates. They made things, you know, you could farm for legendaries. Everything was much, much more about playing the game than trying to play the auction house. They essentially ripped the auction house right out of the game. They just took it out. And that, for me, I don't think that they were wrong to experiment with the auction house. I thought at the time it was an interesting idea. I don't think it was realized to what they had talked about wanting it to be. I don't think that's what they ended up getting. And there's lots of possible reasons for that. But regardless of who you blame and what you say about it, when they removed it, the gameplay loop they brought in, which I'll just admit this, was straight up Diablo 2.
Mm-hmm.
They just took the gear itemization ideas from Diablo 2 and made them good, as opposed to the horrible disease nightmare slog that Diablo 2 is. I'm just sorry, but it's true. but basically by doing that, by basically just stealing that wholesale, they made the game amazing. I remember going, oh my God, yes, this is what I wanted you to be. I wanted to get stuff from doing this instead of trying to, okay, I got a bunch of gold. Now I have to go to the auction house and search for the weapon. Nope, it fell in front of me and I picked it up. That's how this is supposed to go. And there's something in that I think there's a lot you can learn. Like, Wyatt Chang did a Q&A, kind of an impromptu Q&A on Twitter. Did you guys see it?
No.
Yeah, he basically was like, oh yeah, it's the anniversary. You go ahead and ask me questions about the development. And one of the things that really hit me about it was the idea that sometimes game design is surrendering to something that is less elegant and less in every objective way, less precise, less elegant, less well designed, but it hits that thing you guys were talking about, that reptile brain response of, you know, the old idea of the rat in a cage with the button that it can hit to give itself a dopamine blast because it's got like a switch in its head now,
mm-hmm.
and the animal would supposedly just sit there and hit that button over and over again. There's a certain element of that in Diablo's design that the Real Money Auction House actually messed with that.
Yeah, I mean, because yeah, it is called a positive feedback loop, and it's the I have spent X amount of time in game and have accomplished Y, or I have spent X amount of time doing something and earned something. And in Diablo's case, it was, you know, this perfect loop of I want to smash demons. I'm doing this power fantasy. I'm going through and becoming this barbarian or Amazon or whatever it was. And now I'm getting more gear, and this gear feeds back into me being able to do this more better and more effectively than it was before. And like, it just hit that perfect stride and balance. So like, it was great. And then the auction house kind of disabled it, but it tried to capture the same idea and feeling of like back in the day, like in Diablo 2, where people would pay for ruins or items in Staff of Jordans, right? Or things like that, where you would say, I want this bail run, and you'd be like, okay, 12 SOJs. But if you weren't doing that, you were just getting loot. And the better things you were able to kill, the better loot you got, the more likely you were to get a set item or a unique item or something like that. Yeah, Diablo 3 with the Real Money Auction House kind of broke that cadence, and then they found that loop again later on, which I'm glad they did.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. So that was my thing, was just that general idea. But let me see, there's a lot more stuff to talk about. Right now, as in today, according to the email, Overwatch Anniversary Remix is launched, and they're doing basically just older events that they've done before, rather than attempt to do new ones, because right now I think it's basically all hands on deck are developing on Overwatch 2. So they didn't want to have teams working on new events right now. Yeah. So that's happening, and that's going into June. I think that's the 7th of June. Liz, you got a note here about Second Dinner. I know that they're doing they're working on Marvel stuff, but we don't know what, but they're talking about something coming out. I know that I'm going to throw in my own note that I know that Frost Giant is doing something involving their RTS also within the next couple of months, because they've been telling me this. So, you know, when someone tells you we're doing a thing, I'm like, okay, I won't remember that. So this is me mentioning it. You keep telling me to mention it. I'm mentioning it. You guys are doing something. But they haven't revealed what it is yet. They just know that they're going to be sending out invites at some point. I believe I've been told. So new companies that were born from Blizzard, there's at least two of them that we're talking about now. Those are the ones that we've actually... Second Dinner had Ben Brode in it. You mentioned that, right?
Yes. Ben Brode and a lot of other people from Hearthstone. Brode is just the one that immediately hits my mind. He was like the face of Hearthstone for a long time.
Yeah. So,
and also recently I learned is a avid Magic the Gathering player. So thanks, Ben Brode. I saw you. If you happen to be listening to this, saw you on those that particular YouTube show. Sorry.
Well, that's fine. This one is the one that I wrote a post about. I didn't go live, but it will at some point, I'm sure. This week, I think on Thursday, 19th? Steam is, 19th is Thursday. So yeah, Steam is doing their Cerebral Puzzle Showcase for puzzle games.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about puzzle games that I think we all can kind of agree on, I know Liz talked about it in a note in the post I was writing. Puzzle games are often not really given the respect that you might expect them to. Like Joe just mentioned Tetris before, and like that's called Tetraminos. Tetris is one of the top selling games of all time. Tetris has generated literal billions of dollars of revenue. It has sold, I think it has actually sold a couple billion copies through its various iterations. And yet, when you talk about puzzle games, a lot of times people denigrate them. Those aren't real games. It's like, that's mobile crap. You were going to say something, Joe. So.
I was going to say, which is weird because like a lot of games are puzzle games that people maybe forget are actually puzzle games. Mm-hmm. Like Portal and little nightmares.
In the post I wrote, I was like, you could argue Portal is a puzzle game.
It is.
Yeah, you could definitely argue that. For that matter, like, you know, We Were Here and its various sequels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, up to the current one, We Were Here Forever. All puzzle games. There's an action-adventure component to them, but there's definitely... I think the most recent
Trine. Trine. You and I used to talk about Trine all the time.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Or the new one, Tunic.
Yes.
Well, Tunic is a puzzle game with a very thin veneer of Legend of Zelda kind of sprinkled on it. It's like, it basically feels... Tunic feels an awful lot to me like if you took the Breath of the Wild... I don't want to say tomb, but I can't think of the right word for them. The things you went down shrines. Into. Yeah, the shrines. It's like that's the game for Tunic. Just the shrines.
More or less.
But they're with different mechanics. But the shrines themselves, I mean, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, the shrines are puzzles. They're giant puzzles to solve.
Celeste is another really good example of a game that often is just thought of as an action platformer, but you're solving the puzzles in each room you're in.
Or Monument Valley.
Yep.
Although that's very much that's a mobile game again, and people denigrate mobile games. Regardless,
we can talk about Myst. Showcase.
Yeah, we got to get to actually talking about this thing.
Sorry.
The Cerebral Puzzle Showcase that Steam is doing is going to be them basically saying, here are all these cool puzzle games, and we're going to feature them, and we're going to like let you, maybe you've never really known that you like puzzle games. Maybe you've not really played that many, or you've played them, but you didn't really realize what they were. So you can, if you love the games, they're already here and you can look at them. And if you've never really given this a thought, here are some suggestions because we're selling them cheap. I like this because, like I said, a lot of times people don't really think about this game isn't in fact a puzzle game. Like the Portal thing you mentioned, a lot of people love Portal and will like in the next breath, you know, talk about how crappy puzzle games are.
Same with Braid.
Braid. Braid is a weird game in a lot of ways. Or the one I mentioned is Baba Is You. Have you played Baba Is You?
Yes, I have. That is Baba a weird is game.
That is a but weird game, but it's a good
it's
game.
It's a great game. Yeah.
Yeah. Like one moment, Baba Is You. Now Rock Is You. What? I'm the Rock now? What? There's a lot of innovation in the puzzle field and a lot of games that bleed into puzzle because, you know, like the indie market has this idea. We want to do this, but we also want to do that. So you end up with like a lot of games that are puzzle games, but they're also kind of like action hybrids. I want to see what they choose to put in their showcase. Like, because I don't think people understand the weight Steam actually has.
Not only that, but also like recently, this is kind of important too, because like the Steam Deck is going out to a lot of people, which now means handheld gaming for Steam games. And a lot of these games have never been available and like from a PC or console. Wow, the word escaped me for a minute there. In a handheld format before. So like now coming back to them, it seems like really good timing too.
Yeah, there's a lot of different aspects to this. But I'm going to say, like, I know Joe and I can talk about it, but we were just talking and we kind of talked over Liz there. Liz, can you think of a puzzle game you'd recommend to people to see if it's on this to showcase, to see if they could pick it up?
See, I'm not big into what I would call puzzle games. I mean, I've played Monument Valley, I've played Portal, and I've played things like that, and I recognize that these are highly based on puzzles. But, you know, I can't think of a puzzle game that I've played recently. So that's one reason that I'm really interested in seeing the puzzle showcase to see, okay, what's out there? What's new for puzzles? Because when we do talk about puzzles, it's, you know, I think of things like Tetris, which are really fun games, but they're old games. So yeah, mostly I'm curious. I want to see what's going on here.
Okay, Joe?
I mean, I've already gone through a whole bunch of them, but like...
If you had to pick one of the ones you've talked about, which one would you pick?
Don't do that to me.
Dude, choose your children.
No. honestly, Celeste, if it winds up there, is a game that I think everybody should play. It can be very frustrating at times, but you kind of get the hang of it. It's a very good game and it is really a puzzle solving game that does combine, input and quick reflexes. So that would be mine to see if it's on there. I mean, otherwise Psychonauts is technically a puzzle game.
Yeah. Okay. No, I mean, I just, you know, I'm absorbing that and saying, yeah, he's right. He's right. Psychonauts is a puzzle game, but yeah, he is. He is right. I'm going to say, if you don't go get Baba Is You, you're giving yourself a disservice. It is if it is available on the sale and you haven't played it yet, pick it up because it is fun. It is very hard to describe. Like, just basically, it is a puzzle game where the rules change, and the format of the rules is usually something is you or something is something. Like, wall is stop, wall is go, like things like that. The rules change while you're playing it, and the formulation is along those lines. And it's good. It's a good game. If for some reason you don't want to do that and you want something a little bit more structured, Tunic is out. And Tunic is, like I said, it's kind of like The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild if you just did the shrines.
Yeah.
Like if you just made the shrines into a game.
With understanding less because the whole idea is being a stranger in a strange land, not knowing the language type thing.
There's like, for instance, like as you play, you learn more about the language. So you actually start to understand what the UI is telling you. The UI in the game is originally in a language you don't understand, and so you have no idea what it's saying to you.
You know what's another really good one as far as puzzle games go that does also have like story / voice acting and stuff like that in it? Superliminal.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
It is a super fun game, and if it happens to be on that list, like it's an interesting game because it forces you to think about non-Euclidean space, which is a weird sentence that I never thought I would say. but it's really cool because it's like there's multiple ways to solve the puzzles of the rooms you're moving through and to get to your accomplished goal. But at the same point, it's like the rules can be like they're really well defined and really rely on you to figure out what's your best way to get through it. It's super trippy. Like I absolutely adore that game.
Okay, and now we're going to have a really great segue here. The thing I forgot to mention was that Master Loot, or something like it, might be coming back to World of Warcraft in Dragonblight. we had a post about it last week. Basically, Ian Hazekosis did an interview where he said it's not that they don't want to bring Master Loot back, because a lot of people on the team have talked about it. It's that when they had originally developed Personal Loot, the reason they got rid of Master Loot was because Master Loot was at this point a very old system. The entire loot system that Master Loot was based in was very old, and making it work alongside Personal Loot was very hard.
It was also something that was being abused, too.
It was being abused. Master Loot was abused from day one. Like, I'm sure every single person who ever played when Master Loot was a thing has at least one horror story of Master Loot being abused. I have the opposite of a horror story because I once watched Master Loot get hijacked to save something for me. But I don't think we have time for me to tell that whole story, but I did at one time, a guild member literally stopped the raid dead and wouldn't let something happen, because it was unfair, even though it was within the dragon kill points and all that. He did not let it happen because it was unfair. But nevertheless, Master Loot had its issues, it had its problems, and it was also very hard to get that system to work alongside Personal Loot, and they wanted to put Personal Loot in for a lot of very good reasons.
Mm-hmm.
They were putting in LFR, and there was no way you could have Master Loot in LFR. Like, there had to be a system for people to get gear out of LFR that wasn't dependent on one person in the raid being, you know, a good guy or girl, whatever. So they want to bring it back, but they need to make it work in such a way that it doesn't. You don't get situations where people set up runs where Personal Loot type stuff is dropping, but it can be Master Looted to other people, because then they're going to set up raids where like literally everybody's a warrior. Like we brought an extra 10 warriors to get our tank his tier set. Because I mean,
they
already
do that.
They already do that.
100%.
Yeah.
So they don't want to bake that into the loot system. And I get it, but I think the overwhelming consensus for a lot of people who play in guild groups is that having the ability to use Master Loot will get rid of some of the artifacts of stuff like Personal Loot that's really annoying. Like, for instance, I got an upgrade that dropped from the boss and didn't come from, like, you know, just me getting it, but I can't give it to anybody because technically it's an actual upgrade, but I can't use it because it will cheat me of a stat I need.
And we literally just had this happen last night. So, like, we're going through Sepulchre, the first ones on Heroic, and we just had this happen, me and Liz, where somebody in our raid got a ring that was super high in mastery, and I am just a glutton for mastery. And I wanted this ring because it was going to get me to a mastery breakpoint. that I had previously let myself lapse from without sacrificing crit. But because it was an item level increase for the person who got it, even though the stats were absolutely terrible for the particular monk that had it, couldn't trade it. Like, and so it just got sharded. Like, it's stuff like that. Like, it's this idea of, like you're pointing out, gear going to waste. And it feels bad, especially in a guild group where we're trying to progress. And now that they're doing things like, and I'll use Sepulcher, and I can use Castle Denathrius. There are certain bosses that are hard walls for either DPS or healing. They're starting to put those fights back in. I don't think that's going to slow down. We've seen those fights starting to ramp back up. And we used to call those patchwork fights or whatever, where you had to have the gear to get past them. Those are back. Hallandross is a really good example of a fight where if you don't have just the right amount of gear, you ain't getting past them. Anduin's another one. But like, if you keep sharding loot because, let's say, a 270 ring drops, but it keeps going to somebody who just can't use it or won't use it, and then they get rid of it, the next time it drops, it does another check. Does that person have an item level equivalent? So like, doing something to finally address that, I'm really happy. And I understand that this was probably something that was really long in the works. But I just appreciate that, like, it is happening, right? Like,
yeah, they don't know what they're doing yet, but sure, they do know they want to do something. So,
like, having master loot caused problems, but removing master loot caused different kinds of problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And personal loot is a different sort of problem than master loot was.
I think personal loot worked really well.
Yeah,
For the things it was for. But when it became everything, then the problems started to show. Personal loot works great for groups where you don't know anybody.
Yeah, pugs. It's great for pugs.
It's a great pug system. Perfect. It's great for five-man or five-person dungeons where you just joined it, you run the thing, and then you leave. And that's fine. But for guild groups or groups of people who know each other, it's a problem because one of the problems is the one you just mentioned. The other problem is that it gets really confusing. Like, I know we don't do coins anymore, so that's not an issue. But before that, there was that whole problem of, oh, well, something dropped, but I got a coin on it. That's how I got it. So I can't give it to you because it's from my coin roll. And they don't do that anymore, obviously. Now it's all the Great Vault. So at least that they got rid of. The Great Vault solves that problem. But the problem of not being able to trade gear for various reasons, and some reasons you don't even know. Like, it says I've got a ring as good as this, but it's not just that. It's also this reason you can't trade it. It is annoying. And I think that letting groups that built themselves have more control over their how they handle loot is a good idea. In general, I think that's a good idea. But I think at this point, we're pretty much done with this stuff, so we can move on and do some questions from y'all. As is usually the case, I will now confusingly explain how you can ask us questions, because I'm really good at this. First up, you can email us. I like emails. Thank you to the people who do email. It's really great. The email address is podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line podcast of Blizzard Watch, so we know it's for this show. And you can also email any of our other podcasts. So if you've got a question for Tavern Watch or a Lore Watch, you can ask them there too. We did get a Tavern Watch question the other day, and I meant to mention it. I don't remember if I did, though. But also, if you'd rather use our Discord, we have a Discord, and you can go to the, if you're a patron, you can go to the Patron Q and Podcast Questions channel and leave a question in there. Several of these questions were snagged from there. Thanks, guys. And if you're not a patron, but you still want to ask us a question, you can go to the straight up Q and Podcast Questions channel that anybody who goes to our Discord can use, and you can ask us a question there. So, that all being covered, since you've been gone for so long, Liz, I want to hear you read an email real bad, so you're up.
Okay. From Roxy, question for the podcast. It is your friend Roxy Goblin Shaman from Hyjal, U.S. I wanted to discuss the Hall of Fame Blizzard introduced to track the top 100 mythic final boss kills for each faction. Blizzard initially stated that this would help dictate when cross-faction mythic would open up. That was when the first 100 Horde and 100 Alliance guilds killed that boss on Mythic. You could compete cross-realm. It also seemed to have a hope that perhaps some of the 10x Horde guilds might swap factions to get Hall of Fame. As of this time of writing, we currently stand at 74 Horde guilds who have cleared Mythic. And I'm sure this was written a few days ago, and it's probably more now.
I can tell you right now, it's 100 Horde.
Oh, guilds. Really? Did the they Horde, 100?
Horde filled it up, and the Alliance Horde have 12, I think.
And Roxy says, and 6 Alliance guilds at the time. With the upcoming cross-faction raiding, do we see changes coming to Hall of Fame? Has Hall of Fame succeeded? I think I can certainly say Hall of Fame hasn't succeeded in doing what it was meant to do. And right now it just locks people out of content. It locks people out of, you know, playing cooperatively, which I don't like. You should be able to play with the people you want to play with. So that cross-realm mythic feels really important to me, that you can do cross-realm with whatever you want. What about y'all?
Well, I'll straight up. I mean, we've been seeing this debate flare up recently. Pretty much like the vast majority of world first mythic guilds are Horde. And we're now seeing that even guilds that are not world first, but that are realm first guilds are almost exclusively Horde.
Mm-hmm.
Like the imbalance. Well, you guys are Horde.
Yep.
Even like these casual guilds are Horde. And almost everybody who is pushing content in any way almost seems to be Horde. Whether it's because Horde racials are better, whether it's because, you know, people have just... I remember writing years and years ago when I worked for a site you all might have heard of called WoW Insider. I'm trying to say WoW Insider, and I'm calling it Wizard Blizzard. But I remember writing a thing called like Perception Trumps Reality, where it's if people believe that Horde have a significant advantage, even if that advantage is less than 0.1%, if it's, you know, the Horde, you know, Horde raids will clear this thing one day faster or what have you, they will switch. And over time, as more people do it, it goes from an idea people have to a truism to practically unstated law. Everyone believes this. I think that's a big part of why Horde is more popular than Alliance. It started off with like some people just like the Horde more. Other people, they want the mechanical advantage they believe they get for being Horde. For other people, it's easier to get groups now because there are more Horde than Alliance. So as the pool of players goes up, all these things skew it. And once you hit a certain point, it will not correct unless you do something to correct it, because there's the inertia. Like you're in a group with your friends and your friends are all Horde. You don't have much incentive to go Alliance.
Yeah.
Like, why would you? I don't want to lose my friends. I want to keep playing with my friends. So the system, the way it's set up now, cross-faction might help with this. But the way it's set up right now, there's a lot of reasons to keep playing Horde.
Also, like, no offense, but it's one of those things where I really would love to know the numbers of how many guilds are actually rating Mythic versus how many guilds are actually rating Heroic or lower.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that there's been an increase in, or at least there was, I don't know if that's really the case anymore, but previously there was a perception that Blizzard tends to cater to more mythic raiding in general. They look at the mythic raiders and what they want and how they can adjust their encounters. See patch notes where phases on mythic get increased or decreased, but normal and heroic don't get touched for weeks. But if not that many guilds are doing mythic, then the Hall of Fame has no chance of actually doing what it's supposed to do. And it just becomes a way of saying, no, we're still not doing cross-faction. Sorry. Have a nice day. I think letting it be open to just let players play with who they want to is the best thing you can possibly do. And I don't
especially since it's basically just cross-server mythic groups that are affected by this.
Yep.
And so it's basically handicapping the very people who might want to do this.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean, that's really it. Like, honestly, and so in terms of has the Hall of Fame succeeded? No, I don't think it has. If anything, I think it's just been a continued hindrance that has been looked to as this is why we aren't doing it, if that makes sense. So we're going to get there. It's going to be fine. So.
All right. Next up, I was saying, I guess we'll have Liz, because Liz wasn't here for a while.
Hey, I had to read them all. Welcome to the party, Liz.
I'll just read all the questions. Okay. Corey, our good friend and coworker Corey, who came through for us when we didn't have a lot of questions this week. Corey asks, question for the podcast, which Warcraft class would be the most overpowered in real life?
I mean, all of them? Have you seen the things we do? I jumped off of a building and landed in an exploding cloud just routinely. I routinely carry around swords the size of small boats. I can yell really loud and not take damage from an explosion in
you
my face.
You can yell so powerfully, you increase the health of those around you.
Yes. You imagine like someone just goes, you're like, I don't feel very good. Feel better! Yeah, I you know, you're right. You're right.
In our guild, we call that taco yell. Anyway, yeah, no, all of them, but I think Druid would be particularly broken. Because
I'm gonna also say any of the classes that can just randomly make people get up from being dead.
Yes.
Like, you know, I have an heart attack. Okay, you're back up now. Don't do that again. I can only do that once while we're being yelled at.
I mean, as a longtime Paladin player, I think I'm obligated to say Paladin because, you know, if anything bad is going to happen to me, I can just say, nah, this bad thing isn't going to happen. I'm just gonna Divine Shield and I can ignore it. Actually, in Raid last night, we were fighting Zymox and I was like, oh no, I can't get out of this ring of death fast enough. I'm going to hit Divine Shield. And I hit the wrong button and I died, but I could have.
You successfully hit the right button.
It was so good.
Yes.
It was so good.
This is a mechanic that I can ignore if I need or want to, if I'm out of position or I'm just lazy. I can just hit a button and I'm okay. Well, it would kill anybody else.
That was the thing for like Paladin tanks going all the way back to Mists, the Horadon fight. You guys remember that?
Yeah.
He used to put that horrible debuff on the tank. And so tanks would have to swap to let it fall off. But if you had a Paladin tank, they could just Divine Shield, clear the whole thing, and then taunt him right back. Which trivialized Horadon for guilds that actually had a Paladin tank.
Mm-hmm.
But every, you know, like Death Knights I mentioned before, Shaman, not only can Shaman just stop being dead whenever it pleases them. Oh, I'm dead. Oh, no, I'm back up. But they can, you know, they can just make a giant fire guy show up and start hitting you, or a giant rock guy just show up and be really mean to you, and you'll be like, you'll pay attention to the rock guy. Anybody with taunt, because taunt doesn't make any sense. I've said this a million times. Taunt is an ability. Like I can just imagine some incredibly hyper muscled warrior bent over a library somewhere, and everyone's like, "What's Rockthar there doing?" He's reading. What is he reading? Giant book of insults in Draconic. Like, just, you know, how do I say your mother's so fat she laid only one egg? And Draconic. Okay, Niskok Deluvadabak. Oh, I'm gonna kill you, little orc. You know, taunt, the ability that just makes everybody attack you. So yeah, they'd all be really overpowered.
Yeah. I think we're on to the next one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Corey also asked, why do you think that war fronts weren't brought forward as content? How would you have changed or improved on them? The problem I always had with war fronts was that other playing with other people can be really annoying. And in Warfronts, you have the people who know what you're supposed to do, and then people who are just kind of clueless and don't know what you're supposed to do. And it's like, there weren't really, like, it's kind of directionless. There aren't always super clear signs, so the people who don't know can do what they want. And then the people who do know see the people who don't know and are yelling at them. And then there are the people who are just there, and it's like, I'm going to ignore all of this and AFK off in the corner so I can get the rewards. Or, you know, like, yeah. The social aspect of it was what made it a problem and made it not fun.
Warfronts combined all the stuff I didn't like about Alterac Valley with all the stuff I don't like about player versus environment encounters. Alterac Valley, yeah, there's a lot about it that can be annoying, but you have the other faction also going to their end goal to make you want to go faster. You have... Not only are you going to fight them, you're absolutely going to fight them and try and stop them from achieving their goal, but there's time pressure. There's reasons to move. Warfront, why should I do anything? Like, I never once lost a Warfront. I didn't even lose the heroic Warfronts I ended up in. Like, if we're never going to lose, no matter what I do, what am I? Yeah, I can do anything, and I can do nothing. I can literally spend the entire Warfront off in the corner trying to fight this one boss for no reason. It's like the one little event that happens. I can just do that. I don't have to do anything. That was my take on Warframes. I liked them in terms of, I'll just hang out and then at the end I'll get some gear. But I didn't like them because I didn't feel like anything I did really mattered. Like, I never lost one. Did you guys ever lose a Warfront?
I can't remember losing a Warfront.
You did?
Huh. Mm-hmm.
Talk about it, Joe.
I mean, it was indifferent. We just got a notification that said, you lost. Ah. But, like, there was nothing spectacular about losing. There's nothing spectacular about winning.
Like, and you've lost an Alterac Valley in your life where you guys were racing against the other faction, right?
That's
and
different.
Like, we got to pull.
But and then this doesn't. This never felt like that, right?
It never did.
It never had that frantic energy. What it really felt like is it felt like a asynchronous scenario. So there's a board game I love called Root. If you haven't played it, highly recommended. But it's all asynchronous. Every faction is trying to do something different in order to win the game, and that's what it kind of felt like with Warfronts. It felt like, if I interacted with the Alliance, okay, great, but I didn't need to. I could do everything I needed to or do things that had no interaction with them while they did something that had no interaction with me, and it didn't feel like a race. Interestingly enough, it also felt like that was the PvP aspect of Island Expeditions that they talked about that we never got and how that was supposed to be. Because if you remember, like, Island Expeditions, they're basically scenarios, but at one point they were supposed to be PvP experiences as an option where, like, the other faction was actively working against you or trying to race against you for the resources to complete the scenario. We never got that. But Warfronts, to me, I think the reason they didn't get dragged forward is because they were horribly labor intensive on the back end, because they were whole zones. They were large scale things with a ton of players for little return. And once players were done with them, they didn't go back because there really wasn't an incentive to go back. So why put your effort into that when you can kind of go to something else that might have a better return on investment or better player engagement? And for Autoluke and chat, the board game is called Root, R-O-O-T, Root. But that's my two cents on it.
Yeah, I don't have anything further to add. I think I'm more.
Okay. Shall we make Liz do another one?
Nah.
Woo-hoo.
Okay, go ahead. She said woohoo, yeah. So.
Yeah. No, this one, I'm going to skip a question, and I think this is going to be a really easy one for all of us. From Riptides, picking up from the last Blizzard Watch podcast, should Blizzard remove armor type restrictions from transmog? Is there any real problem running around in cloth transmog as my warrior or plate on my warlock? I say, bring it on! More transmog!
Same. I honestly think that we are past the point of time where what you wear and wield is important at a visual inspection quick glance in PvP anymore. Add-ons tell you what you're fighting. Like, I can mouse over somebody and know exactly what spec they are and what class they are in 2 seconds. I don't care if it's a warrior wearing cloth twill armor. I'll know that he's, you know, a warrior, and that's really all I care about. So give me. I want cloth. I need more dresses.
I'm gonna tell a story based on a completely different game, but just to give you an idea of how I work on this thing. I'm streaming Cyberpunk because I've been playing a lot of it lately. They recently patched out an add-on that allows you to edit game files. This is an add-on that most people use to cheat. I use it because there is no transmog system in Cyberpunk. So I have to go and make all the gear as good as the gear I actually already have so I can wear it and just look how I want to look. I hack a game for the express purpose of making my character look how I want to look. Of course I'm okay with this. Any question, should they remove any restriction from Xmog at any time? My answer is going to be yes. Like, I can't think of an answer that I would give that would be no. Like, no, I can't. There's no transmog question that you... Go ahead, ask me. Throw a restriction at me here. One of you. Someone to throw a restriction at me. See, they can't do it. They can't even think of any Xmog restrictions they want. Just get rid of all of it. Just let us do whatever we want. As long as we go out and get the piece of gear.
Oh, sorry, real quick. Apparently there was a PvP Island Expeditions. I apologize and walk that back. Sorry, please continue.
That's okay. I didn't remember it either. But yeah, transmog, why are we even having this discussion at this point? Transmog came out in Cataclysm.
Mm-hmm.
Cataclysm.
And was born before, in Diablo.
Yeah. Before Diablo 3 came out, just do it already. Even stuff I've defended in the past, like not letting two-handed weapons transmog to one-handed weapons. F me, I was wrong. You know, I that guy was a jerk. That guy was you, like last week. Yeah, I know. That guy was a jerk. He was probably had low blood sugar. I don't know what his problem was. No, remove transmog restrictions. Doom, we're done. Mic drop.
I mean, WoW is basically, WoW with transmog is just the basic, just the most entertaining game of dress up ever. And I think it's a proven fact that looking good makes you do more DPS. I mean, that's just
100%.
What can I say? That's just the truth.
The red bug mount in Ankh-Morath was demonstrably faster than all the other bug mounts. We all know this.
Listen, there are few universal things that I have learned in life thanks to Warhammer 40K and orcs. The red ones go faster. The purple ones are sneaky. If it's blue, it's super lucky. And if it's yellow, it's going to hurt. So yes, transmog matters.
But yeah, I think we're all in agreement. The council has spoken. Transmog restrictions must go. Thank you. Good night.
Yeah.
we got to do one more or are we done?
That's up to you.
I'm asking you guys how you feel.
I'm good for one more if Liz is. We can do the Lord Soth one.
Yeah, you can do the Lord Soth one. Go ahead.
Oh, boy. Yeah, this one's... Okay. From Lord Soth, question for the Blizzard Watch podcast. Well, Lord Soth here. Sorry to do this. Yeah, I should have... Yeah.
Did you read this question?
Okay, so yeah, Joe did not know what question no, I was going I just to ask. Lord just Soth. Said to read this question.
I'm sorry, and, Lord Soth, you maniac.
So, sorry to do this now, but my intrusive thoughts can be your intrusive thoughts. What do you think people like trolls and orcs do instead of kissing? I just don't see lips meeting very easily with such large protrusions. And so Joe unwisely did not read this question before telling me to read it.
No, I didn't.
What's I'm the so answer? Sorry.
I got one for you.
They
you
want to hear like an actual they absolutely kiss. Go ahead.
It's the fact that various races on Azeroth and Draenor, for that matter, have these massive teeth displays that causes sexual dimorphism to such an extreme level in those species. The reason that orc females have much smaller tusks and smaller heads than orc males is so they can get in there and kiss them. Same with trolls. The male troll tusks are so massive that the female troll can just come on in under them and get in there to do some snogging. And election pressure has selected for this. Similar to how walruses, only male walruses have giant tusks.
I was going to say there is actually a use. Like, as funny as this question is, there is actual, like Matt hit it on the head. In nature, this is what animals do in our world. So there display. Is it's display, but both or whatever myriad of sexes are in those species will evolve to accommodate that.
look at peacocks right now, peacocks and peahens. One of the things about, you know, one of the things that a lot of people don't want to understand is that reproduction is very often controlled by the females of the species.
Mm-hmm.
Because of course they're the ones who have to actually do the reproducing. Mm-hmm. Of course they're in control of it. They select who they're going to be with. As a result of this, the things that attract them are selected for, which is why peacocks look like they're Vegas headliners and peahens are brown. The peahens can look whatever, like just brown. They don't have to attract anything. They can just being a peahen is going to be enough. The peacocks have to do display stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Same with deer and those massive antlers. The reason a moose's antlers are so enormous is because it attracts mates. It's a evolutionary sign saying to the world, yeah, I'm so strong and healthy that I can have these ridiculous things on my head that drain resources and will probably get me killed in all sorts of situations. And I'm still here. So clearly I have the right stuff. And so with, you know, orcs and trolls, especially trolls, those massive tusks are telling all the lady trolls, this guy will probably, he knows how to get his tusk out of a bush, like when he's hiding in a bush and his tusk gets snagged on a branch, he knows how to get out of that. Unless he cut one of the tusks off, that guy's a coward. He just should have stayed there and died. This is like Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom for Azeroth right now. I'm telling you.
Listen, all I'm saying is I think our patrons would absolutely love if we totally did a Steve Irwin version of like the creatures of Azeroth. I'm just throwing it out there.
It's like, you just, you know, honestly though, seriously, Blizzard, you can make some male female models that don't look so ridiculously dimorphic.
Yeah.
It is crazy. Draenei in particular, what are you doing? Why?
And I will say that they have gotten better about it recently, especially with like the new trolls. So when you start going into that, they're a lot more similar as far as like their proportions go. Makar orcs, females are a little beefier than regular orcs. Are a little less dimorphic than normal orcs.
Kul'Tiras women.
Oh God, yes.
Kul'Tiras women are great. I mean, seriously, awesome.
100.
That's my answer to this question is that they evolve that way so that they can snog around it.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise you just have to think about a bunch of sad orcs trying to come up with like, actually maybe orcs just play patty cake. What the heck? Why not? They just slap hands together. That's cool. You know, like, I really like you. High five. Womp. Like orc flirting is a lot of going, rah! You know,
we all know that
they're yelling that at each other. That's what they do. Yeah.
If I've learned anything from Draka, orc flirting is punching.
Yeah, there you go. You punch him, and if his tooth falls out, he wasn't really worth it.
All right. I think it's time for me to do the outro before this gets way out of hand. All right,
has
folks.
It not already?
I mean, it really has.
Not.
Yeah. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means this podcast signing community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience.
Thank you very much, Joe. Worgen just rubbed faces together, I guess. This has been the Blizzard Watch podcast. Thank you guys so much for being here with us. If you've got a question for the podcast, you can send it to us via email at podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line podcast or Blizzard Watch. So we know it's for this show. Gnomes just write documentaries together. And if you want to come on back and send us something through Discord, you can do that. We've got the Q and podcast questions channel for non-patrons or the patron Q and podcast questions channel for patrons. I'm pretty sure Night Elves just run around killing things. That's because, you know, they actually have sharp teeth too.
They do. They're like sharks.
You know, yeah. So you gotta be careful there. I so much want to tell the story of the time that my mom accidentally caught my father's face right open with her teeth while they were making out, but I don't have time for that. This has been the Blizzard Watch podcast, and we'll talk to y'all next week.
What just happened?
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.